Hello and welcome to the Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast, a podcast all about constructing your career in neurology. I'm your host, Dr. Antti Vu from Drexel University College of Medicine. Today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Catherine Davis, Associate Professor of Neurology from the University of Pennsylvania and Director of the Penn Epilepsy Center, as well as Dr. Jamie Hatcher-Martin, Movement Disorders Service Line Director of SynaptiCure, a virtual telehealth company for patients with neurodegenerative diseases. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Dr. Davis, Dr. Hatcher-Martin.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start by saying I really love big conferences. While many meetings went virtual in the past few years, which had some great advantages, I have really been looking forward to going back to conferences, to meet up with long-lost neurology friends, learn new things, eat food in a different city. Let's start by talking about why you go to these conferences. What's your favorite part about attending?
I totally agree with you. I'm happy to get back to bigger conferences. I think the favorite part of a conference has changed for me throughout my career, and I'm at the point where my favorite bit is to meet up with colleagues that I've worked with across the country and internationally for much of my career, but also to network with junior people. And I really enjoy the mentor-mentee relationships that often start at the conferences.
Yeah, I would agree too. And I think it's changed for me over time. I started out as a resident, you know, you try to go to every, you have like something for every hour of the day and you go to all these lectures and you want to learn as much as you can. And I think as I've gotten further along in my career, it's the networking, getting into some more of the nuances. So a lot of the smaller work groups, getting into some more of the details is really helpful. I do still go see the posters, but I think I spend more time doing that on my own and less sort of specific times for that. Just when I have a little bit of time here and there, but I'm really focused on sort of ways that I can advance my career and then getting more involved with others and, you know, where I can help as far as that goes.
Now, with all the conference out there, both big and small, how do you decide which ones to spend your hard-earned CME money on?
So I can start on this one. It's difficult. Sometimes it certainly depends on the cost. I think that's probably true for a lot of us. Sometimes it depends on how often the conference is. So some of the conferences don't occur every year. And so when those pop up, those will be the first ones that I go to. I try to, because I'm movement disorders trained, I usually try to go to at least one sort of focused movement disorders conference a year, whether that's our big annual international one versus, you know, one of the smaller local ones. I try to do that. And again, it depends on what I'm trying to get out of it. If there's a specific theme for the meeting that year, then I might be more or less likely to attend. And also location, right? If it's a location that I'm really interested in, I might make a little bit harder attempt to make it there.
Yeah, I have a really similar approach. There's, I think, certain core meetings that I'll go to every time they're held. I'm an epileptologist, so the American Epilepsy Society is certainly the biggest meeting in epilepsy, and that's one that I don't miss regardless of the location. There are also I also have a research lab, so there are more like niche research conferences that I also, some are only held every other year, that I also will make a really big attempt to make every single time, because they're so important to find out what's going on new in my research space and meet with collaborators and colleagues. And then for the bigger meetings like the AAN meeting, I think it does become more difficult to get to those types of meetings regularly. And I've evolved to the point where I go to when I'm asked to do specific things at those conferences. So this year I happen to have gone to ANA and really enjoyed being a mentor in the K awardee sessions. And I really derived a lot of benefit and connections from doing that, which I certainly would do again if asked. And then similarly for AAN, I'm giving a talk. I think that I'll take that opportunity to connect with people that I don't get to connect with on a regular basis within the epilepsy space.
So both of you mentioned networking, and I think that's one of the big benefits of gathering so many neurologists together at these conferences is just that. So what do you think are the highest yield ways of networking at big events like this? And I'll give that to Dr. Hatcher-Martin first.
So I think it's a couple of different ways. I think if you're early on in your career, often some of the best ways that I met people was with my own advisors. So I would go to, you know, maybe particular sessions that they were at, or maybe they were actually giving a talk, or I knew they were going to certain sessions. And so I would try to go to those to get introduced to other people. I often tried to go to some of the smaller courses. So for example, movement disorders, they often do like an evening one where it's a little bit more relaxed and there's a lot more discussion. You know, you review interesting cases. And often you'll introduce yourself in those as opposed to sort of these bigger courses where you're just sitting and sort of passively absorbing all this information. Also, a lot of times the individual groups like the movement disorders group or the epilepsy, you know, whatever those specific groups are, a lot of times those are smaller and there's a lot more discussion in those. Or if there's particular areas of interest. So I knew I was, you know, very interested in telemedicine. So I actually reached out to some of the subcommittees and things like that early on and said, hey, listen, you know, I know I'm junior, but I'm really interested in this. Do you have any room for somebody to observe or to be like a junior member of this, where I was able to sort of sit in and really learn a lot about this and get introduced to a lot of people without having to sort of have a huge commitment of time or expertise, which I didn't really have at the time. But that's what really kind of got me in, is that one, I showed the interest. And then two, again, there's just these smaller groups where you really start to get to know people. And once you start that, it really gets the ball rolling. And then also applying for things, some of the fellowships that are available, like, you know, I did a Palatucci, or Neurology on the Hill is another great one. I mean, you really work with people on that one a lot at AAN or other interest groups. There's a lot at the Movement Disorders, or International Movement Disorder Society, where I got involved in some of the interest groups that are there as well.
Anything to add, Dr. Davis?
I agree that you should really rely on and plan to connect with your mentors from your own institution before the conference. So establishing that expectation or with someone you feel comfortable with that's also going to the conference, like, hey, I'd really like to meet these people, or I'm really interested in getting connected to this space. And the mentors from your own institution or that you've established from your previous time as a medical student will be happy to introduce you. And that's something that more senior people really enjoy doing and feel, and, you know, kind of uniquely qualified to do. So I would take advantage of that and prepare. So that may mean, you know, reading ahead. If you're specifically interested in a certain space, prepare, like, know who's going to maybe be there, know some of their literature if you're interested in the work they do, so you're not, you know, kind of naive to the people's backgrounds that you're speaking with if it's someone who's really senior and well-known in the field. So, and I agree, like, going to smaller things, smaller parts of the conference, that'll be more hands-on. Also, volunteering for things that you're interested in. Just because you're a resident doesn't mean you might not be able to get on a committee if it's something you're really specifically interested. So advocating for yourself and also discussing with your mentors what the opportunities are ahead of time is really important.
And if I can add to that, too, I would say don't hesitate to introduce yourself to people. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes we all get a little shy, or you get, you know, a little bit of that, like, oh, I don't know if I should go up there. But I mean, I've had people come up and introduce themselves to me. I've, you know, sort of gotten up the courage and introduced myself to people and said, hey, listen, you know, I'm really interested in this. And people are really receptive. I mean, I think it's the goal of the meeting is to meet people and make those connections. So people are very open to that.
Now, Dr. Davis, you mentioned something that's really key, which was reaching out to mentors even before the meeting. And so I think that's a big part of attending these conferences is planning out how to attend, whether that's going through the program. What are other ways that you would recommend sort of first-time attendees or early faculty attendees do prior to attending one of these meetings?
You know, one of the things that you mentioned, I do think it's important to go through the program and plan ahead so you're not overwhelmed and you just show up and don't know what you're going to look at. There are usually at these meetings opportunities to actually formally be matched with a mentor, and I would definitely take advantage of that. Those are relationships that you may actually keep for career long, and typically the mentors that volunteer for those really want to be mentors. They're volunteering, and meeting someone like that from outside your institution can be really valuable. So that's another kind of planning tip. I think that it's really helpful to spend some time like perusing the entire list of abstracts and targeting what posters you want to visit. And that's what I do. I personally still like to get the paper version of the conference agenda. And one of the first things I do when I arrive at the conference, even before I start attending sessions, is start like perusing the different posters and circling the ones that I really want to hit that look really interesting, particularly to me.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing, kind of having a plan ahead of time. I usually try to rank my, like if there are specific courses I want to attend, I'll kind of rank those. Like if time is limited, what are the ones that I really, really want to get to? Finding out what's available after the fact, is there streaming that's available? A lot of times conferences will have, you have access to the virtual sessions for, X number of weeks after the meeting. So I can kind of decide, which ones can I do remotely versus which ones do I think I really want to be in person, keeping in mind that at least for me, I often plan on doing something, streaming something remotely later, and then it doesn't happen. So being honest with myself about how much I'm actually going to do after the conference, I think is important. Also, at least for me, there was a tendency to go to all of the movement stuff, because that's what I was interested in and that's what I enjoyed the most. But I don't know if it was always the highest yield because it was stuff that I already knew. It was stuff that I was already comfortable with. So I think sometimes picking things that you're not as comfortable with and going to those sessions, because that's where a lot of those interactive sessions can really be helpful. And sometimes, really diving into the agenda and looking, okay, well, I'm interested in this session, but it's 3 hours. Are there specific parts of it that I'm interested in? Can I go for the first half and listen to the first two sessions and then maybe catch the second half of something else? That can really be helpful as well.
So our next question is for people presenting their research work. So conferences are a great opportunity to share the work that you're doing and find out about the work others are doing. What is the best way of doing that if you have something to present there, whether it's a poster or a platform session? What advice do you have for people presenting their research work?
I can take that one first. So if I think the most common situation would be having a poster that you're presenting. I think it's sort of obvious, but just to state the obvious, you definitely want to know your work forward and backwards, including details on the statistical analysis that someone may come and ask you about. And that will just reflect very well on you. You should practice what kind of the presentation, because people will come up and want to see you present your poster formally, and you should be ready to do that and have that be smooth and interactive and not just kind of off the cuff, because that just will make you appear to really know what you're talking about and make your work more interesting and appealing to people as well. I think it's a really amazing opportunity to meet more senior people that tend to go through the posters and come by. And if you're ready and able to engage actively, that will reflect really well on you. And I think in terms of going the other way, it's really the same advice for when you're going to look at posters. It tends to be the junior author who's at the poster, but not always. And it's frequent that senior last author is hanging out at the poster as well. So it's a good opportunity to meet more senior PIs that may be a future mentor for you. But, going to the posters and really engaging with the presenters and, interacting with them, asking questions, you'll learn a lot. It'll help embed the information in your memory and also allow you to meet people.
And I think too, making sure your poster is sort of basics, right? It's visually appealing. You want to have a good amount of information, but you don't want it to be so much that people have trouble reading it from, a little bit of a distance. I think having, either a website or a QR code that somebody can look at to get more information. If there's a lot of detail that's maybe not, directly needed on your poster, that can be very helpful. Having a way for people to contact you. So if you have, either like regular old school paper business cards, or you can do virtual business cards. I think that can be really helpful as well. The same goes true for presentations. There's a tendency to sort of try to put everything you can into the presentation. But if you can pare that down a little bit and just really make sure you're practicing whether it's your poster presentation or your virtual talk, or not your virtual, but your talks, when you know that information, in and out, it really comes off as sort of much more easily digestible, and you can put in a lot of those details in your talking as opposed to just in the slides themselves.
I think that that's great advice. And one of the neat things I've actually seen other folks do in their poster presentations that I thought was really great was that they offered two versions of their poster presentation. They say, do you want the 1 minute pitch or do you want the 5 minute pitch? So that they have actually different versions of their poster presentation, depending on how much people want to engage with them or how much they want to know about their poster. Some people just want the quick kind of one liner about it. Some people really want to hear more in depth about the methods and so on. And so I think it's helpful to have more than one type of presentation practiced, honestly.
Yep, absolutely.
So by the end of a conference, usually we're all exhausted. We're usually quite tired. I usually feel both underaccomplished and super ambitious all at the same time. So how do both of you follow up on your conference time to make the most of it?
So I usually try to, and it is difficult. If I've met somebody in particular that I want to make sure I try to keep in touch with, I usually try to fire off a really quick email as soon as I remember it. And I will often put details into the email that may seem like, well, I just met them. Of course I know all these things. But when I go back in a month or 2 months or 3 months and I'm like, oh, wait, which, you know, who is this? Or I don't remember the details. I try to put as much of that information into the email as possible. Or if I save their contact information, I might put some notes, into the contact, like, oh, we talked about, you know, we both have French bulldogs or, you know, whatever it is, just sort of little key and bits of information so that when I go back later, I know some more personal details. I think that's always helpful. And I think it's helpful to have sort of a, you know, if there's something specific that you're asking, then put that in the email. Don't just say like, oh, it was nice to meet you, but you can say, thank you so much for offering to introduce me to when we talked about XYZ. So you sort of have very specific information. You kind of have a specific ask or, you know, I'm so glad you reached out to me. I know we talked about me doing something and, you know, sort of put that information in there so that everybody, right? Because sometimes you're writing to somebody who's also met 100 different people. And, you know, as exciting as you might be, sometimes it's hard to keep track of that. So I think it's helpful for both parties to do that.
I really love about putting in a little detail about how you remember them. I do this at conferences all the time. I will run into somebody who was my attending a few years ago, and I will throw in a line, oh, it's been so long since I last saw you when I was a resident at Penn. And mm-hmm. So I'll kind of throw them a bone to let them know how they know me, which I think they sometimes appreciate. Whether they need it or not, I'm not sure. But oftentimes I find that, like, you know, some of my more senior mentors appreciate that. Dr. Davis, what do you think about how do you follow up on your conference time?
Sure. So I do a lot of the similar things. I mean, there are usually several outcomes from conference. There are some that are more like clinically driven connections. And I tend to make a list of the follow-up items that I want to hit from the conference that I, you know, keep, you know, actively on an online list of your choice. And I'll check those off over the next 2 to 4 weeks after the conference. From just to add some kind of a different perspective from a scientific perspective, my lab after big conferences, our next lab meeting, we go through a data blitz of different interesting posters or presentations that we each saw, knowing that not everyone could see everything. And that always is a really nice wrap up and summarizes the like scientific content that's relevant to our work.
I think that's an important point, too. A lot of times if there's people that are not able to go, we'll try to review the abstracts ahead of time. And if there's key abstracts that other people are interested in, we'll try to make sure we go to those posters. A lot of places now will actually have PDFs of the posters as well. So you can kind of look at those ahead of time. And that can definitely be helpful.
Yeah, just to add to that, on the clinical side, our center also for clinical updates does a similar summary after a big, more clinically oriented conference. So again, to bring everyone up to speed, not everyone could attend the conference. Not everyone certainly can go to all of the conflicting sessions. And so it's sort of a high yield follow-up from the conference.
And to add one more thing, I'll often, if there's things that come up, let's say I'm in a session or I'm in a discussion and there's somebody, you know, that brings up a specific topic or like, oh, there was another study that was published, I'll often try to look those up really quickly on my phone and then either email it to myself or just save it, bookmark those in a specific folder that's like follow up from this meeting, because I know I'm not going to read it at the time, but I know if I don't do it at that time, I'm probably going to forget as well. So if I can have all of those in one spot that I can easily reference back to, it takes a lot of the burden off trying to remember everything.
So really, thank you both so much for taking the time to talk with us today. Are there any final pieces of advice that you have for any of these early attendees to conferences that will enable them to make the most of their conference time?
I would say, you know, it's always good to have a plan. It's always good to review all the information ahead of time and try to have as much of a plan as you can. But it's okay to be flexible. It's okay if there's certain things that you miss. It's really helpful to know what things are available after the meeting, you know, whether it's virtual, whether it's, you know, and how long that's available. Make sure you kind of mark that down, that you have 2 weeks or 3 months or a year, whatever it is, to review that information. And just keep a list, you know, have, whether it's on your phone or, you know, on, I'm still one of the pencil and paper to-do list people. I have one online too, but I still like to be able to cross those things off. So having just a list of that information can be very helpful.
Just to add to that, I think that you're never going to feel like you saw everything or achieved everything you wanted to at a meeting. So, I don't be too ambitious. Make sure you enjoy yourself, actually enjoy the sessions, enjoy the scientific content, enjoy the interactions you have with others. But I really can't stress enough, as a first time or an early conference attendee, to put yourself out there and meet more senior people. It's really the best opportunity. And the senior people are there with dedicated time set aside to be at the conference. So they're not pulled in a million directions, maybe only half a million at that moment. And so it's really an amazing opportunity to catch one of these people and really talk to them. It's potentially a good early job search activity. So getting your name out there, particularly if you already know what field that you're interested in. If you are planning to go to do a fellowship, potentially setting up some specific meetings with people that you know could be a really good match to be a future mentor at a given institution. So those are other really important things to consider when you're planning to go to a conference.
All right. Well, thank you so much for both of your time. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I'll be at the AN meeting in April, possibly at the Movement Disorder Society in Copenhagen. We're still deciding. But if not, then I really do hope to catch up with both of you soon.
Absolutely. It was great being here. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast was created and produced by Sarah Schaefer. It is not recorded as an official podcast of any institution or organization. The podcast is unfunded. Opinions are those of the individual participants. Music by Audrey Knapp. Artwork by Shivani Ghoshal. Want more content like this? Be sure to subscribe to the Neurology Nuts and Bolts podcast to hear more about constructing your career in neurology. Follow us on Twitter at NeuroBolts and on Facebook at NeuroNuts and Bolts to stay up to date on new content, and give us feedback on what you want to hear and tell your friends. Thanks for joining us.